Welcome to Career Tools. This week, relationship errors, the common enemy, part one. The questions this cast answers are, why is the common enemy strategy unhelpful? How do I avoid falling into the common enemy trap? And what should I do instead? According to the Project Management Institute, we are going to need 25 million new project management professionals by 2030, which is only 7 years away. So project management is a growing field, and the more qualified people there are, the better it is for the world, because more projects done on time, on budget, in scope is good for all of us. And when the PMI gives you a certification for project management, they ensure that you continue your education by issuing professional development units, and Manager Tools is now an authorized training partner of the Project Management Institute. So our trainings count towards your professional development units. You just attend our training as normal, and then you can go and submit those credits and they will be approved. We did all the work for you. There's no evidence or anything else you need to submit. And if you aren't a member, but you're a project manager, you might want to consider it. And if you're not a project manager, that might be a career path to consider. Go to our website and look for training. Using the common enemy strategy as a way to bond with particularly new colleagues is a really easy trap to fall into. Whether it's those people in IT, mm-hmm. those people in HR, or the boss, and they all have those inverted commas. I'm doing air quotes, you know, mm-hmm. those people. That client. The outcome is always destructive to teams and your relationships to individuals on them. And in this guidance, we're going to talk about why that strategy is such a bad one, why it's so easy to fall into it. And it's such a comforting one. It's a bit like gossip. It's fun in the moment, but oh, is it not good long term? And what to do and say instead.
Yeah. So our outline for today is, first, don't look for common enemies. Don't accept the invitation, don't ignore it, and finally, build relationships on positive interactions.
So first up, don't look for common enemies. I think they just come up. They're easy to find because you don't have to look for them. They just appear.
Right. They appear, for sure. And I think that's part of, I mean, really the need for this cast is it's so easy to, when you're either, you have someone new, a new colleague, a new, you know, person that you're interacting with, or even maybe you have someone who, you know, you probably haven't made a good first impression on, and you're maybe in arrears in your emotional bank account or your relationship bank account with that person. And what you're trying to do is kind of get out of that hole, dig your way out of that hole. And an easy trap to fall into is, oh, you don't like that person. Guess what? I don't like that person. Let's use that commonality, that common bond. And that's a very, very dangerous. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. It's a bit like families who say, we fight amongst ourselves, but if you attack us, we stand together. You know, it's a situation where A and B bond over their shared hatred of C. And C can be anything. It can be a person. It can be an abstract. It can be that form that we all hate filling in. It can be expenses, which I use ad nauseum as the thing we all hate. And I'm sure not everybody hates them, but I hate doing expenses. It can be a certain customer and you don't even need to see them. It could be a certain supplier and you don't even need to see them. You know, it could be UPS because the guy, and you don't even see the guy, but the guy puts the boxes in the wrong place. And it could be a different guy every day, and it's the guy. It can literally be anything. It could be the way I've got some tablets, and the way they're sealed into the packet, it hurts my finger when I push them out. Like, those packets drive me nuts. And if anybody else takes them, like, I could bond with someone over those packets and the way they're put together and who designed them. And, you know, you can bond with someone over any of that.
Well, I think of it as even as simple as, this is a little outside of the workplace, but I mean, even if you're dining at a restaurant, most of us have sat down and ate at a restaurant, and you've got, you know, a waiter or waitress that's serving you, and they happen to have another table mm-hmm. that is loud and obnoxious or maybe demanding, and you kind of feel the need to be like, hey, sorry about those people over there, right? And you try to find, we always, I think it's so natural for us to kind of, it's just so easy to fall into that and say, oh yeah, hey, yeah, they're.
There's them and us. Over there. And the part of the way we define us is not them. Mm-hmm. And it's so destructive because we make someone else our enemy, and we're basing our relationship with one person on our dislike of someone else, or our distrust or our contempt for someone else. And we're building it on shifting sands because who knows, the next week that person might need to be our friend, and we're sullying our relationship with that person. Like, corporate reshuffles happen all the time. Like, who hasn't complained? There's corporate reshuffles. There's something else we all love to hate,
right,
and we can bond over. But let's just say you make corporate reshuffles your enemy, and they happen once every 6 months, and you bond with someone over them because it puts you in a negative position this time round. And next time round, somehow you get a promotion out of it. And that person wants to come to you and wants to bond with you again about how terrible these corporate reorgs are. And you got a promotion out of it. And now you can't, like, that relationship is all sorts of out of whack because mm-hmm. what happened last time was bad for you both, but this time you got something good out of it. And you don't have to like everything or everyone you work with, but you do have to work with them. And if corporate reorgs are happening every 6 months in your organization, you have to live with it. And if you know that it's coming, then railing against it and bonding with people over it, it's a short-term strategy.
Yeah, and I think that's the crux of this. There's a reason why it's easy to fall into, because short-term, it works. It works a lot and often. But long-term, ooh, because things change, like you mentioned, right? I mean, we change our minds all the time, right? And so we may change our minds or change our thinking on things. But I think the important point here is to understand what kind of this fallacy is, this relationship error could be. And then I think understanding that it is really easy to use. I mean, all you need to do is just agree. Mm-hmm. If someone says something like, oh gosh, that UPS guy, or those IT people, or that person from HR, or if you're in a union environment, right? That shop steward, oh gosh, right? And even if it's an inanimate object, right? It's
that
something
printer.
That's not, yeah, that printer, right? That copier. There's a reason that that printer is there. There's a reason that that copier is there. And there's a reason that we use that system, or we do that, you know, we have to use that form or something. There's a reason behind it. And just because we don't agree with it, or because someone else doesn't agree with it, that doesn't mean that it's okay, or it's acceptable, or it's the right thing to do to agree with someone when they express their, you know, animus or hatred for that particular
or
thing.
Even that it's helpful to you. That's the thing for me. If I went all day agreeing with everybody, there's just so much of this stuff. And if I agree with you that the printer's annoying, sure, okay. And then I agree with someone that the coffee pot's not working, and isn't it annoying that people don't put their cups away and clean them in the kitchen? And then I agree with the next person that form is stupid, and I agree with the next person that, yes, these badges never work on that door. And I've just gone through the whole day being irritated by things. And believe me, I can be irritated all day without having extra help, but... it just puts you in such a negative frame of mind, and that bleeds over to everything you're trying to do. And I just don't think that's helpful for anything. And yes, some of those things exist for reasons which are stupid. Yeah, somebody bought that printer, and you might think, yeah, it exists in my office for a reason, and that reason is stupid because somebody bought the wrong one, and I wish they had bought another one. Yes.
Sure.
And probably you can't do anything about it, and you're wasting energy fighting it.
And here's the other thing. Some people may be listening to this and go, well, but people come to me a lot and say that stuff. Well, this is where we need to evaluate our own behavior. If we're agreeing, right, then people are going to bring, they're going to bring up more of that stuff, right? Because people want a co-signer. They want, you know, someone to be on board with them. And so if they say that stuff and then you're like, yeah, I know, isn't it the worst? Like, it's just so terrible. And then they're going to bring more of that stuff to you. And then you're going to feel flooded with that negativity. And eventually there's going to be things that you don't agree with. And then you're going to have to, you know, either, you know, disagree or feel like, oh, am I, you know, hurting this relationship because I've kind of established this pattern of I co-sign on that. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm right there. I'll commiserate with you. So.
And sometimes we're accused of creating or encouraging this culture of put up or shut up. You know, you either put up with it or you shut up about it, which is essentially you accept what is. And to some extent, that is what I'm saying. Yes, accept that that printer is the one that exists in your office and, you know, just use it. But also, I'm saying save your battles and, you know, save your energy and fight over the important things. And, you know, I just...
Use that energy for something more productive. Use that energy for something that's going to be more beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just doesn't seem worth the fight for me to fight over something so small or fight for something so small. And if you have power over which printers are chosen and you can be on that steering committee or you're in procurement and you can have some effect on that change, or you know someone in procurement and you can persuade them, then go do something about it. But if you can't, then you're just railing against a brick wall. It just doesn't seem productive.
And maybe you're listening to this and you're saying, well, but I mean, certainly you're not suggesting, you know, that I be disagreeable. I mean, that's not going to help with relationships. And certainly Career Tools is all about results and relationships. And so, you know, shouldn't I be agreeable? And shouldn't I, you know, kind of, isn't that easier? Isn't that, you know, helpful at building a relationship? And yes, again, short term, that could absolutely produce some great relationship benefits in the beginning. But we have to also consider that we're going to need relationships long term as well. And so just by agreeing, you may think that you're choosing the easier road, right? But really what you're doing is potentially creating situations that are going to be, you're going to be worse off in the future, right? And so we can't think of our world in terms of relationships as binary, as black or white, or as Wendy said earlier, us and them, because there's more nuance to relationships than that. So if your ability to ingratiate yourself with other people is dependent on you driving a wedge between you and other people, then no, you're not building relationships, right? In fact, you're doing what, you know, I would say is playing relationship whack-a-mole. You're saying, well, I don't want this, or I'll hit this mole, you know, in order to have this one pop up. But then, oh, I might have a need to knock that mole to get a different one. And that's not going to be beneficial. Your building of solid relationships based on positive experiences can't be dependent on you having bad relationships.
Do you have excellent employees who can't seem to see eye to eye, agree, and achieve an optimal result, even when you know they're both recommending the same solution? The Manager Talks Effective Communicator Conference might be your answer. We teach folks to observe other people's behavior, perform some mental analysis, and tailor their natural communication style to achieve a more successful exchange and workplace result. We'll work with up to 30 people, where extensive practice is the key. It's great for all professionals, not just managers, particularly those who are customer facing, either internal or external. Contact Maggie at manager-tools.com or check it out on our website. Look for training for organizations. Having a common enemy is not a good basis for a relationship. It's a single point of relationship, which is not a good way. If you think about your relationships outside of work, they're based on common interests, preferences, views. They're more well-rounded. You probably agree with your best friend about the merits of fishing and breakfast and the next election. And whilst it is said that opposites attract, that's generally not true. The friendships that are only based on one commonality, like the friends that you have in college, generally don't last, most of them, because the only thing you have in common is that you were at college at the same time. You don't want to spend 8 hours fishing with someone who disagrees with you that waffles are best for breakfast and that it's a person's duty to vote. The common enemy strategy says we have this one factor in common that we don't like that this other thing. And so it would be better to try and build a relationship on more factors that are more positive, to try and create a deeper, more rounded, better relationship that will last than just pinning it on that one factor.
Yeah. And a common enemy might have been useful when organizations were strictly hierarchical and bureaucratic and slow moving. But in today's world, organizations have become more evolving and squishy, and they're less structured. And so you've got, you know, these fast-paced environments with not a lot of layers, and organizations are flatter. And because of that, you risk potentially having an enemy that in 2 months' time really needs to be a friend, right? And so things change and things evolve. And it's when you start making enemies for the purposes of building relationships, you risk then being in a situation where you need that enemy and you've driven that wedge. And that's not a good position to be in especially, you know, our more modern organizations that rely on a lot of collaboration across the organization.
Yeah, but I was thinking of the Shakespeare quote, which I'm going to butcher, but something like, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave, best we practice to deceive." So much better to be just friends with everybody than trying to work out the complexities of who we don't like and who I sided with, and keeping all that in your head.
That's a really interesting thing, a very interesting point, because if this is a method that you're going to employ to build relationships, then even to do it well, you ought to be considering, well, okay, maybe that common enemy has more, you know, other relationships or resources in the organization. So maybe actually, instead of using that person as a common enemy, I need to make this other person, who was the person I was building a relationship with, my common enemy. Maybe I need to ingratiate myself with them more. And now you're getting really...
It's like playing 3D chess.
Yeah.
Why make your life so hard?
And my guess is that there are not a lot of people who do that consciously, but I'm sure that some people are thinking about things like that, like the ramifications of, well, this person has more resources, this person has more connections, and so I'm certainly not going to make them a common enemy. I'd rather kind of be on their side and then drive my wedge somewhere else. And what's scary about that is that I think some of those same people who do that are also people who say, gosh, I hate having to play politics.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what that is, right?
You're
that's
creating
what you're doing.
Politics. Yeah.
Yeah. You're creating it where they don't need to exist.
Another reason for not playing this strategy is it prevents you seeing the positives of whatever you've set up as your enemy. You know, if you dismiss any strategy that your competitor uses just because they're your competitor, you miss potential threats because you're just dismissing it without looking at it. And you miss ideas that you could use because you're just dismissing it. If your enemy is the process, then you're dismissing it. You know, if you just dismiss it and you just say, it's stupid, I'm not going to do it. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're missing an opportunity to improve it, or an opportunity to find a way to work within it that, you know, makes it easier for yourself.
Yeah. And we're going to talk through some examples that hopefully we can highlight how, even in that exact situation, you can, rather than focus on the dislike or disdain you have for that process, you can still acknowledge someone's, you know, concern or frustration and be helpful by instead leaning into, well, here's some ways that I've found to work with this kind of flawed system, which we all have and we all experience. And I think the other thing, Wendy, about what you said is it goes against one of the core principles that we talk about at Manager Tools and Career Tools, which is assuming positive intent. And you can't assume positive intent if you're trying to find a common enemy, right? By definition, those things are in conflict. And so you kind of have to be able to see the positive in even things that are frustrating. And they're there. They're just sometimes a little harder to see.
Yeah. And another reason for not doing it is it tears down the team. And that's one of the bright line boundaries we have for our team members. And we'd suggest you have for your team members. We have two rules. We do not lie. We don't tear down the team. That's it. And either of them is a firing offense here. And because that's how seriously we take those two negative behaviors. And it's based on ethics, right? Lying is an ethical violation. But it's also based on what we've seen happen in teams when the bad worm gets in the apple, because once it's in there, you can't rescue those teams. You can't just cut the bad worm out and hope that the apple comes back whole, because it doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no saving it.
You'll never know you got all of it, right? No. And it's, you know, I know that it's not a popular, I've heard it a lot, but it's probably not very well received, but sometimes bad behaviors exhibited by employees sometimes are referred to as cancerous in organizations. And the reason that analogy is there and exists is because that's kind of similar in the fact that you think by, you know, carving that out and carving that, you know, that person or those behaviors out, that you've kind of got it all, but it kind of snowballs and you don't know where else there could be, you know, those same or similar behaviors kind of tearing down the team. So, and there's another point, I think, here when we think about kind of this fallacy of a common enemy. It's not always embraced or employed by people who are trying to build relationships or trying to use it. But I've known managers, so managers that I've worked with in the past, they know this kind of concept exists. And so what they do is they try to use it to galvanize their team. And what they do is they say, everyone needs a common enemy. Let it be me. Mm-hmm. And so they, as the manager, say, I'm willing to be a little harder, a little more maybe unreasonable sometimes, because I want my team to have me as that common enemy, so that'll help them work closer together and that'll help their relationships. And I think, again, it's rooted in, and maybe this is me just, you know, assuming positive intent, it's rooted in not I want to be overbearing or I want to be, you know, a jerk in any way, but it's I want to help my team build better relationships. And so what I'm going to do is I'll follow my sword. I'll make myself the target. And yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And sometimes it's one of those things where, like, if you know this happens or this is going to happen naturally, it's a way to kind of steer into the skid, I guess.
Yeah.
But the problem is that any team that's built on having a common enemy, there's no foundation. There's no real scaffolding underneath it.
It's like that thing about the fishing, right? It's a one-factor relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
And the moment that goes, there's no relationship at all.
Yeah. And really part of your role as a manager is to not just think about your team, but to think of the organization and think, you know, not 5-10 years down the road, but think of 18, 16, you know, maybe 2 years down the road. And what happens if you get promoted? Which hopefully that's something that would be good for you and you would want. And then somebody gets into your previous position, maybe even one of them, one of the people on your team. What does that do now to that dynamic? It set the precedent for this person who already is going to have a hard enough time taking over a team of their former peers or potentially coming in from the outside and having to take over this new team. And now you've set the precedent that they're the bad person, they're the enemy. And what if they don't want to employ that tact? What if that's not the way they want to run the team? It's just, in general, not a good recipe for success.
And you mentioned this earlier, this all sounds like politics. And if you want an organization without politics, you better become a sole proprietor, because politics is just an outward expression of relationships. It's just what people who don't like it call relationships. It's the result of what you see that comes from the give and take of individuals who are all trying to achieve in the best way they know how the organizational objectives. It's the only way you get things done when there's a lot of people involved. And it, you know, even if it's three people involved, you still have to have a negotiation about which sandwich shop you're going to. So stop worrying about politics and start considering your individual relationships with the individuals that you work with.
Yeah. How can you work well with everyone?
So there's a question to leave everybody with this week. And then next week, we'll talk about some examples. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.